Join us now for the Chapel Hour, coming to you from the campus of Bob Jones University. Our speaker is Mr. Jason Ormiston, professor of Bible at BJU. The title of his message is Crossing the Thresholds of Life. The text is from Nehemiah chapter 2.
Let me invite you to take your Bible and turn with me to Nehemiah chapter 2. Nehemiah chapter 2. I want to speak to you about crossing the thresholds of life. And when I refer to thresholds, I'm not talking about that point that must be exceeded to begin producing a given effect or a result to elicit a response. I'm talking about a doorway. I'm talking about going through something that each of us must face. Decisions. You face them all the time. By the nature of the fact that you're here, you've selected the university of choice. Do you remember that process? Right now it's time to look at your schedule. So you're going through the process of going through that threshold of trying to figure out, should I change my major? You may be struggling with the thought of summer ministry. Should I engage in a particular summer ministry? What's the impact of that on my life if I do that? It could be something like a dating relationship. Or should I continue on in this education? Should I engage in that ministry? I'll tell you, it's one thing to talk about these thresholds. It's a whole nother thing to cross over them. To give you an example of this, back in Minneapolis, we had the privilege of working with international students from the University of Minnesota. And as we did that, one of the ways we reached out was to host them. We'd pick them up at the airport from all over the world, and we would take them into our homes for a period of about 3 weeks to a month. And in process, they would look for a place to stay, understand the campus of the University of Minnesota, and of course, it would build tremendous opportunities for relationships that hopefully produced gospel witnessing. And this was just a tremendous privilege. And yet this one time I picked up three guys from China, mainland China, first time in the United States of America. My wife and children were actually in Greenville at this time visiting with her folks. And my parents were out of town, and it worked out to where I was going to pick them up from the airport and take them to my dad's house. My dad lives in the middle of the city, and it's a very rough neighborhood. And it was kind of interesting as we were driving home, first before I get there, to pick these guys up, what I needed to do is have a sign that would have their Chinese names on it. And I won't even begin to try to pronounce their Chinese names. But when they eventually, 1, 2, 3, came to me, I introduced myself and I said, what is your name? Can you help me say your name again? And the first gentleman said, oh, just call me Jackie. Okay, I can call you Jackie. And the next one said, just call me Jerry. And the last one said, I'm Frank. And I said, well, I appreciate that, gentlemen. That makes it easy. Why did you pick those names? And Jackie said, I love Jackie Chan. And then Jerry said, Jerry Seinfeld is awesome. And Frank said, I don't know, it sounded American, you know. And so I took Jackie, Jerry, and Frank on the way home to my parents' house, and as we were driving there, they were asking me all sorts of questions about security. They noted that it was a rougher part of the city, and so we discussed how they would get into the house, and we discussed the alarm system. I gave each of them a key, and yet they wanted me to know that, listen, they don't want to burden me at all with time, and so they said, we will get a bus pass and go to and from the campus. You don't need to worry about us, and we'll just come in and out of the house. And I said, that's fine, and we'll meet for dinner, and we went through that process. Well, the following day, I was over at a coffee shop studying for the Sunday sermon, and I received a phone call. And in the background, I could hear the alarm system going off. And it was just tremendously loud, as I know it to be. And I could hear on the other phone, it was Jackie saying, oh, Mr. Jason, I don't know the what. And then he started saying something in Chinese. I said, hold on, I'll be right there. And I left my stuff and grabbed my stuff, jumped in the car and came to my parents' house. The alarm system had been going off for about 15 minutes. This made the whole neighborhood aware that something was going on at the Ormiston dwelling. And so a crowd started to gather around the house. And by the time I got in there and I punched the code, they all just breath of fresh air, relief. And I said, let's go outside and just get a breath of fresh air as well. And so we did. And immediately going outside, we were surrounded by gigantic police. I mean, I think I'm big. I'm 6 foot six. These guys were 6 foot eight, at least. And they obviously caught me off guard, and I stood there, and they said, "Do you own this residence?" And when I am confronted with a situation that, you know, like offhand, I don't know how to respond, I'm very honest. I said, "No, I don't live here." I said, "But let me explain. These guys are from China," and that wasn't helping my situation. And I said, "They're from China. This is my parents' home." And then finally I relaxed, and they said, "Oh," and Jackie, Jerry, and Frank handed out the passports, and they were fine. And they're just like, "Next time, you know, call or figure out or tell these guys what to do." I said, "Yes, I will. And so we were through that, and I was encouraging to the guys. I said, "Here's the code," and I walked through the whole process, and they said, "Fine." Why do you struggle with going through a threshold? Maybe because you fear once you cross over that threshold, there will be an alarm that goes off. There will be some kind of struggle that you're going to have to face that you really don't want to go through. Because right now, let's be honest, things are very comfortable. Nehemiah was in such a situation. As you have your Bible open in Nehemiah chapter 2, if you look at chapter 1, it starts out describing Nehemiah doing his job as a cupbearer. We find him as a cupbearer in verse 11 of chapter 1. Nehemiah is doing his job faithfully, productively. He is in the midst of serving in the Persian kingdom as a Jew of high prominence. It's really amazing how God selected different Jewish people to be in positions of honor and respect. To be a cupbearer was much more than just drink this so that I don't die. It was actually you could talk with the king and converse about policy. And he was very wealthy, we find out later on in the book. He was very comfortable. But one of his brothers came and said to him, "We've got a problem in Jerusalem, our homeland. The gates are burning. The city walls are broken down." And it gripped his heart. And Nehemiah responded by praying and fasting and seeking the Lord. "Lord, how would you have me be a part of this problem? I want to be a solution to what's going on here." In chapter 1, verse 4, we find Nehemiah responding that way, and then he prays. The prayer here is what you've heard, the adoration, confession, thanksgiving, and supplication. He begins by adoring God in verse 5, verses 6 through 7. He confesses both the sins of his people, and he identifies himself as being part of that problem. And then as you go down in the rest of the chapter, we find him thanking God for the promises that he's made about gathering Jerusalem together. And then he makes his final supplication. That's where we get adoration, confession, thanksgiving, supplication. That's a model for how to pray. So Nehemiah prayed, and he finally said, "Lord, I need your help." And he says, "For I was the king's cupbearer." And then we get into chapter 2. Now follow as we read this together. "And it came to pass in the month of Nisan, in the 20th year of Artaxerxes the king, that wine was before him. And I took up the wine and gave it unto the king. Now I had not been before time sad in his presence. Wherefore the king said unto me, 'Why is thy countenance sad, seeing thou art not sick? This is nothing else but sorrow of heart.' Then I was very sore afraid." Right there, very sore afraid. You know why we don't cross over thresholds? Because we are very afraid. The fear of man, the fear of failure, and sometimes even, if we're being honest, the fear that God may not, in our own minds, have my very best intentions in mind, we think. I need to preserve myself in my direction, so I'm going to choose what's safe for me. Now, Nehemiah had other reasons why he was afraid. He was afraid of losing his life. If you went in front of a Persian king and you weren't supposed to be there, we know from the book of Esther that you would die if he didn't raise his scepter. We also know that if you had a sullen face and the king was not pleased with you being unhappy, you could also die. But fear is the reason why we do not cross over the threshold God has intended for us. Verse 3, "And I said unto the king, 'Let the king live forever. Why should not my countenance be sad when the city, the place of my father's sepulchres, lieth waste, and the gates thereof are consumed with fire?' Then the king said unto me, 'For what dost thou make request?' So I prayed to the God of heaven. And I said unto the king, 'If it please the king, and if thy servant have found favor in thy sight, that thou wouldest send me unto Judah, unto the city of my father's sepulchres, that I may build it.' And the king said unto me," the queen also sitting by him, For how long shall thy journey be, and when wilt thou return? So it pleased the king to send me, and I set him a time. Moreover, I said unto the king, if it please the king, let letters be given me to the governors beyond the river, that they may convey me over till I come into Judah, and a letter unto Asaph, the keeper of the king's forest, that they may give me timber to make beams for the gates of the palace, which appertain to the house, and for the wall of the city, and for the house that I shall enter into. And the king granted me according to the good hand of my God upon me. Well, I want you to know that this passage, these eight verses, provide for us tremendous encouragement about crossing over the thresholds of life. First thing I want you to see is that you and I must be willing to wait for God to open doors. We must be willing to wait for God to open doors. You see, between chapter 1 and 2, what do we have? We have a period of over 4 months. We have from the month Nisan to what we find in chapter 1, verse 1, Chislu. That's a period of over 4 months. Nehemiah was waiting. And in his waiting, we find him praying over and over and over again. And so I want to encourage you to be willing to wait for God to open up the door. How do you do that? Well, you faithfully serve where God has you. Faithfully serve. In verse 1, we find him that he was doing what he needed to do. I took up the wine and gave it unto the king. He was ministering in the way he was supposed to minister. And he had not at this time been sad in front of the king's presence, but he was faithfully serving the way he was supposed to serve. Now, there are some that would believe that the king was in his summer palace, and so Nehemiah had not been in his presence at all up to this point. This was the first time since Nehemiah had heard of the news. It could be that. It could also be that Nehemiah was disciplining himself not to demonstrate outside, externally, the kind of deep feelings he had for his city. And yet, at this point in time, it showed on his face. Now, it's hard to hide your feelings sometimes. It's easy for me to come to a Monday 8 o'clock class and see a lot of tired faces. And the funny thing is, sometimes that's the way the teacher feels as well. And maybe you can see that on the teacher's face. But this king was very perceptive in saying, there's something wrong with your countenance. Sometimes you can communicate a lot with your countenance. I can communicate many things to my children. I can be on my phone because someone has called me and they're doing something that they should not. And I can look at them and they understand, ooh, we need to go into another room to continue, right? No, they can see from my face whether or not I'm communicating something to them. It was obvious that Nehemiah's face was downtrodden. But what happens here is that in verse 2, wherefore the king said unto me, he waited for the king to ask him the question. And so as you're looking to cross a threshold, wait for God to open up that door. Wait for him to provide that providential leading. Nehemiah did not make a request before he was confident that God was involved in the process. Because he understood what was at stake here. It wasn't going to throw away the outcome of his people, the condition of his homeland, and the security of his own well-being based on zealous ambition. Nehemiah, he waited for God to open up the door, and God clearly did through this king responding in the way he did. The king says, why is thy countenance sad, seeing thou art not sick? This is nothing but sorrow and sadness of the heart. Because the king was perceptive as to what was going on. I appreciate the humanity here when you see in verse 2, then I was very sore afraid. Here you have someone who had a very big view of who God was. And yet when the opportunity presented itself, he was scared. And doesn't that happen for you and I? It happens all the time. We are presented with opportunities. And as we're presented with an opportunity, we are challenged with the thought, what if this doesn't turn out the way I intended it to? What if this isn't really what I'm supposed to do? What if I don't have enough money to come back next semester? What if he doesn't turn out to be the guy that he acts like? What if a lot of things, and Nehemiah demonstrated and modeled this fear. I sure know what it's like to be afraid before I share the gospel with someone. I know what it's like to have that gulp in your throat. But Nehemiah proceeded in verse 3 and said unto the king, let the king live forever. Notice his response is very politically correct. He says, let the king live forever. He is speaking to a Persian king in a context that is appropriate. As he says, let the king live forever, he says, why should not my countenance be sad when the city, the place of my father's sepulchres, lieth waste and the gates thereof are consumed with fire? Here, he doesn't appeal and say Jerusalem specifically, because Artaxerxes in the book of Ezra had already called back a group that went to rebuild the temple. And so when he's responding, Nehemiah is using words that the king would understand because he's a pagan man. And he uses in such a way to say the city of my father's sepulchres. And the king notes what's going on and he responds. Now, note what the king says. The king said unto me, for what dost thou make request? So I prayed to the God of heaven. The prayer here that Nehemiah is praying, he's faithfully serving where God has him. He is willing for God to be the one who opens the doors. He's faithfully serving where God has him. And now he throws up a prayer to God. He prays to the God of heaven. Now, this is not a time where Nehemiah falls to his knees and starts saying, king, hold on a second. I need to reconnect with the Creator here. If he did that, that would scream of some sort of plot against the king. No, he prays based on the preparation he had spent months of prayer. And it comes back to the thought process is, as you were trying to discern, what is God doing in my life? Faithfully serve where God has you, as Nehemiah did, and continue to take your burden before the Lord in prayer. Most of us have sent up a quickie prayer to God from time to time. Maybe you're facing a difficult exam, or you spot the lights of the police behind you in the rearview mirror, or as an employee about to ask a special favor from a boss. But this is not just a quickie prayer. I want you to know that this is a prayer based on what is going on in chapter 1. Praying without ceasing, that's something that we should consider. And we should do it with sincerity, realizing that we're calling out to a God who hears and cares. You're facing a threshold. Should I cross over this? Should I go there? Very simply, are you following the example that Nehemiah set by being engaged in the ministry right before him? Are you doing that right now? You know what our tendency to do is when we have a big decision to make? It's to withdraw from society, sit in our room and say, I have too many pressures, too many things to think about. I cannot deal with anyone else right now. And that's not what Nehemiah does. He is burdened deeply, but he continues to serve. And he doesn't just keep it within. He calls out to the Creator of the heavens and earth, because God offers answers. He is real and he cares about you. He cares about me. Nehemiah believed this. And yet, of course, there's this fear factor. We all have a tendency to pull back and say, what is going to happen next? Be willing to wait for God to open the doors. But I also want to encourage you to be prepared to act when the door is open. Look at verse 5. And I said unto the king, if it pleases the king, and if thy servant have found favor in thy sight, that thou wouldest send me unto Judah, unto the city of my father's sepulchres, that I may build it. When he's saying here, I said unto the king, if it pleases the king, and if your servant has found favor in your sight, this is found throughout the book of Esther. And Nehemiah here speaks again with courtesy and humility, but he is very forthright. He says, the reason why I want to go back is I want to build the city. I want to do what God has laid upon my heart to do. We find the condition here that Nehemiah was prepared to open up this door when God says, here it is, here's your chance. And Nehemiah is ready to act. How is he ready to act? He's ready to act on these things. He counted the cost before entering the door. What we find in verses 5 through 8 is that Nehemiah did some PhD level research. He researched the cost regarding the time. It was asked of him in verse 6, with the queen sitting next to him, alluding to the fact that it's the summer palace, how long shall thy journey be, and when wilt thou return, and how long will you be gone? Or when will you return is another way of saying it. So it pleased the king, and he set him a time. He didn't say, oh, yeah, but that's right. Let me get back to you on that one. He had his audience with the king. He was preparing ahead of time through prayer, and he was doing some research, and he was counting the cost. So when that door actually came open, he knew what he was facing, and he was able to set a time for the king. You know, we set goals sometimes in relationship to things we want to accomplish, and sometimes the things that are easy to fix are projects, but it's the people that take so much time when you're working with them. Nehemiah was able, by God's good hand of blessing, to build a wall in 52 days, but to work with the people, it took him over 12 years. And so you need to count the cost before you actually go through, but you should also count the cost not only regarding the time, but regarding the prospect of danger. Verse 7, moreover, I said unto the king, if it please the king, let letters be given to me to the governors beyond the river, that they may convey me over till I come into Judah. He said, I need letters so that I can go and cross over where I'm supposed to cross over, but I need to be able to do it safely. Can you help me with this? And the king said, sure, I can do that for you. It is almost as if he received a little bit of an open door, and because Nehemiah had done his research, he was ready to push it just a little bit further. He was ready to say, if you're open to what I'm saying to you, I'm ready to go another step. I need letters. And then he goes on to say, there's danger, so I need letters. There's also a need for materials. He talks about supplies for building the wall, for building the citadel or the fortress of the temple. Nehemiah understood the importance of securing the citadel first because he understood that there would be problems. Whenever you cross a threshold of life, there will be challenges that come your way. And you need to be prepared to handle and address these things. And I love some other implications here about in verse 8, how Nehemiah intended to build a house and live there. This is incarnational ministry, an example of it right here. Be prepared to act when God opens up the door. But I want to encourage you to count the cost. But bottom line, and this is really the heart of what I want you to hear, I want to encourage you to take courage to act when the door is open. Take courage to act when the door is open. Many of you have something that God has placed on your heart right now. You know that you're supposed to do this, but you're sitting back and you're talking about it. Now, better than talking about it, let me encourage you to pray about it. Okay, I am praying about it. Good, you're praying about it. But what happens when God actually opens the door? You know what you need to do? You need to go through the process of, I'm going to do this. I'm going to take the courage to act when the door is open. There is that fear factor that comes in, and then there's that stepping over and saying, I will go through this open door with God's help. Verse 7, moreover, I said unto the king, see, you have this courage that builds up as you take that first step of faith. It's like a junior high girl asking her dad, I need a new outfit for school. Can we go out and buy a blouse? Okay, dad says. And then while they're at the store, by the way, this skirt goes really well with it. And then you keep going, oh, these shoes work perfectly. And the courage continues to build up and build up. Do you know that as you take that first step of faith, that the waters part because God is in it? He has great things that he wants to do through your life and through my life. But so many times we fall short of what he wants us to accomplish because we lack the courage. And why do we lack the courage? Because we have a poor view of who God is. Notice as we're being prepared to act when the door is open that we count the cost. We take courage to act when the door is open. But I also want you to see here that we have a good view of God. Remember God's providence in the entire process. Verse 8. He says that towards the end, he says, and the king granted me according to the good hand of my God that was upon me. The king granted me according to the good hand of my God that was upon me. Nehemiah gives credit and praise to God for his hand of blessing on the project. You know what? When you think about what's going on here, it's so much bigger than just Nehemiah working through, should I cross this threshold? In the course of redemptive history, the city must be rebuilt, the temple rebuilt. It begins the process of the return of the Messiah. We never know when we take that step of faith how God will use it for His glory, to give greater weight to Him, to magnify His name among all the nations. We think so many times in very small pieces. God asks you to take a step of faith. I want to encourage you to do that very thing. The day following the episode that led to my new Chinese friends being introduced to the neighborhood and the police in Minneapolis, I received another phone call. This time, Jackie, Jerry, and Frank were standing outside of my parents' home, and they said, "Mr. Jason, how are we supposed to do this again?" And I said, "No problem." And I talked them through the process. I rehearsed with them the simple principles that they had already been exposed to about how to punch in the code, how to make sure that you put in that last button so that the police don't come and the neighborhood doesn't come. You may be waiting outside right now of God's intended blessing for your life. He wants to do great things with you, and yet you're holding back because you're saying, "It's not the right time. I'm not ready." And He's saying, "Trust me. This is the right time. This is the right way." And I want to encourage you, be willing to wait for God to open up that door. And how you do that? You faithfully serve where God has you. Are you doing that right now? Are you faithfully serving where God has you? Are you continuing to take your burden to the Lord in prayer? As you do that, be prepared to act when that door is open, because it does demand action. And that takes courage, and that's only based on a good view of who God is. Count the cost before you enter the door. Take courage to act when the door appears open. And remember God's providence in the entire process. And God will use you. He will use me to accomplish great things.
You've been listening to the Chapel Hour, coming to you from the campus of Bob Jones University. Our speaker was Mr. Jason Ormiston, professor of Bible at BJU. For a cassette or compact disc copy of today's message, send a check for $6 to Campus Store, Bob Jones University, Greenville, South Carolina, 29614. Be sure to mention the name of the speaker and today's date. The Chapel Hour has been sponsored by Bob Jones University.